Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Wednesday, August 16th, 2023. I'm Naima Latif, and today we'll be joining a White House briefing on the fire disasters in places around the United States and some of the weather disasters that require assistance and President Joe Biden's response. In Chicago, on Tuesday, August 15, 2023, President Joseph Biden signed a disaster declaration allowing the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, to offer individual assistance for residents in Cook County, Illinois, who were impacted by severe weather in July. FEMA's individual assistance could include grants for temporary housing and home repairs, low-cost loans to cover uninsured property losses, and other programs to help individuals and business owners recover from the effects of the storms. Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois said, "Thank you to President Biden and FEMA for recognizing the devastating effects of recent extreme weather on Chicago and its surrounding neighbors and taking the appropriate action to ensure impacted residents can get back on their feet. Residents and businesses, especially those on the west side of Chicago, who were most brutally hit, are now able to access additional resources necessary to rebuild and revitalize. And I know Cook County will build back stronger than ever." Beginning July 29th, several rounds of severe storms passed through Illinois, producing heavy rainfall, flash flooding, hail, tornadoes, and straight-line winds. Central Illinois experienced a derecho that brought damaging straight-line winds, resulting in 5 confirmed tornadoes, along with wind gusts in excess of 100 miles per hour across multiple counties. The tornadoes and straight-line winds resulted in large debris fields affecting homeowners, businesses, utilities, and local governments. The storms also caused disruptions to transportation due to flood and debris on the roadways. The flash flooding created the problem on the roadways. On July 2nd, additional severe storms dropped 8 inches of water in a short period of time in a historic rainfall total. This caused flash flooding in and around the Chicago area. The storms also downed numerous trees and caused widespread power outages in northern Illinois. For those in affected areas to apply online for relief, go to disasterassistance.gov. That's disasterassistance.gov. And now we'll join a White House press briefing in which Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre gives an update on the White House response to recent fire damage and disasters in Hawaii and in Maui. Let's join her now.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hi. Apologies for the delay. We had the administrator was actually briefing the president in the Oval Office, so we wanted to make sure that she was ready to go, and the president got the briefing that he needed before we came out, so apologies for a late start in the briefing. So in a minute, you will hear directly from the FEMA administrator on how the Biden-Harris administration has mobilized a robust whole-of-government response effort to support immediate and long-term rescue and recovery efforts in Maui, Hawaii. First, as the president said yesterday, we are praying for those who lost so much, who lost loved ones, their community, their businesses, their households. We are also incredibly thankful to the first responders and also the very brave firefighters who are on the front lines, who are dealing with this response and recovery effort. Early today, we announced that the President and the First Lady will be traveling to Hawaii on Monday to meet with first responders, survivors, as well as federal, state, and local officials. Since the onset of the horrific fires in Maui, dozens of federal departments and agencies have been working with state and local partners on the ground to assess ongoing needs and providing resources and personnel to support response on the ground. Last Thursday, within hours of receiving the request, and you've also heard this from the governor of Hawaii himself, the president signed a major disaster declaration for Hawaii within hours and spoke publicly, as you all know, about the tragic fires. And with that, as I just mentioned, the president has been kept updated on a daily basis, kept close contact with the governor and the senators in Hawaii, and obviously the administrator has been giving him updates regularly. And with that, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Corrine. Good afternoon, everybody. As you just heard, I did just finish briefing the president in the Oval Office to give him an update on the ongoing recovery efforts that are happening in Hawaii. And I will continue to provide him updates as we continue this response in support of the state of Hawaii. While I was in there, he had an opportunity to call Governor Green and let him know that he has approved the governor's request for 100% reimbursement for the emergency work that's being done for a period of 30 days within the first 120 days at the governor's choosing. I will also be traveling with the president on Monday and will work with him to better understand some of the impacts that are happening. And I know that the people on the ground in Hawaii, and the governor mentioned this as well on the phone, will appreciate a visit from the president. Before I give an operational update, I do just want to take a minute to portray what I saw while I was on the ground there earlier this week. The periling stories of survival, the heroic accounts of response, and the sense of community that I saw across the island. While I was in one of the shelters, I met with one young boy who was getting ready to go back to school but had lost everything. And we worked with him to find clothes and a backpack, school supplies, to be able to be ready to go to school in his new facility. It's stories like these that let you know that this is more than just the visual impact of what we're seeing on television. More than the visual impact of the burned landscape. It's the level of devastation from this fire and the feeling of loss from such a culturally rich community that was really palpable everywhere that I went. And while the people of Hawaii are in mourning, and as we mourn as a nation with them, I am filled with hope as they bravely begin to take the steps that are needed to heal and recover. I also want to commend the heroic first responders, many of whom lost their residences while they were battling the blaze and helping to support those that were fleeing to safety. Now, it's important to remember that this is still a very active and dynamic situation, and our FEMA urban search and rescue teams are working closely with the state to help account for those who are still missing. Given the conditions and the need for additional resources, we will have at least 40 canine search teams on the island, in addition to hundreds of search and rescue personnel, with more on the way. We're working carefully to search the affected areas thoroughly and compassionately while respecting all of the cultural sensitivities. This is a really hard disaster, and this is a really difficult search operation. Because of the conditions and the fire debris, the dogs have to navigate the heat. They have to deal with issues with their paws, walking through glass and debris. And in these conditions, the dogs require frequent rest, which is why we are sending in additional dogs to augment the operation. In addition to them, 30 specialists from the HHS mortuary teams are already in Maui and will soon be joined by the mortuary specialists from the Department of Defense. These experts are going to be able to help identify loved ones. Now, I want to be honest with everyone. This is also going to be a very long and hard recovery. But our federal, state, and local partners are working around the clock to help all of those who have been impacted by this disaster. From the beginning of this event, my regional administrator has been on the ground and has been leaning forward to support those in need. As he always does, President Biden directed me to move quickly and push as many resources into the area so we could help people as soon as possible that were impacted. Since the news first broke about the fire, I have been in constant communication with President Biden to provide him real-time updates of the situation, both while I was on the ground and to inform him and his team of the support that we are providing to the community. And I want everybody to know this. The President, FEMA, and the entire federal family will be there to support the people of Hawaii as long as we are needed. Now, just a couple of operational updates for everyone. Today, FEMA's Associate Administrator for Response and Recovery, Ann Bink, and Region 9 Regional Administrator, Bob Fenton, are both on the ground. Today, we have mobilized millions of liters of water and food. We have deployed more than 700 personnel to the disaster, with more than 600 already on the island. We have given out $2.3 million in assistance to families, and we have approved over 1,300 registrations for assistance. We launched our Transitional Sheltering Assistance Program, and this will complement the state's Fire Relief Housing Program for residents. And we also authorized critical needs assistance to make sure that we're putting money in the hands of survivors. We also launched a joint task force to assist the state in ensuring that the housing assistance that survivors are eligible for, whether it's through FEMA's programs or the state programs, that it will be seamless to the survivor and they don't have to figure out who they're supposed to call for help. But I also need all of your help. I need you to help us get the word out and encourage more people to apply for assistance. Please help us spread the word to residents of Maui and encourage them to register for assistance with FEMA with either our staff on the ground, through our website at disasterassistance.gov, or by calling 1-800-621-3362. We also opened our first... 1-800-621-3362. Or 1-800-621-FEMA. We also opened our first disaster recovery center. What these facilities are, they are brick-and-mortar locations that have federal, state, nonprofit partners that will all be co-located where people can register for assistance and help get some, and get additional support. And this is an important first step in their recovery process. We're also cognizant of the fact that the fires have completely upended people's lives, and that this is especially true for young children of Hawaii who are unable to return to school in their affected areas, similar to the young boy that I talked to you about. As both a grandmother and a mother myself, my heart breaks thinking about the tragedy that they have gone through and their road ahead. Children's Disaster Services has already deployed two teams in partnership with the American Red Cross to provide care and a safe and a reassuring presence in our shelters. And I am certain that this will bring ease and comfort to the parents that are still coping with the gravity of the situation with such devastating loss and want to provide some sense of stability to their families. Additionally, the Red Cross, in coordination with Maui County, continues to support staff in five shelters where food, water, hygiene kits, and other essential resources are being provided to individuals. They are also coordinating these services so that anybody who leaves a shelter for a hotel or other place to stay will be eligible to receive the same level of services being offered at these shelters. Our partners at HUD are also supporting the people of Hawaii by providing a 90-day moratorium on foreclosures of Federal Housing Administration insured mortgages and home equity conversion mortgages. This is also another very important step in their recovery process. And lastly, debris removal is going to be a critical aspect of this recovery. We have mission assigned both EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers to start the process of debris collection and planning for removal. We are also mindful, and I stress this to my team every day and every time I talk to them, that we need to continue to ensure that we have a strong respect and awareness of the Native Hawaiian cultures and history during our response and recovery processes. And I want the people of Hawaii to hear it from me. FEMA and the federal family are here to be with you, and we will be with you every step of the way. So to close, to the people of Hawaii, I promise you this. We will do everything we can to continue to help you rebuild on the island, the island that you call home. Together with our state, federal, and volunteer partners, we will continue to provide support to Hawaii for as long as is necessary. But the people of Hawaii, they deserve a recovery that not only addresses their immediate needs, but that positions them as an example of resilience, strength, and resolve. Thank you, and with that, I'll take any questions.
Administrator Criswell, I heard everything you said about all the resources that are being brought to bear, but we keep interviewing survivor after survivor who says that either they didn't see any government personnel or assistance for days, or that they still haven't. How do you explain the disconnect between what they're saying and what you're saying about all the resources that are there right now?
I think you need to understand that this community is going through an amazingly traumatic event. I can tell you that we have personnel that are on the ground year-round and embedded in with the state as soon as the fire started so we could continue to understand what resources were needed and help move them in. The Coast Guard conducted 17 rescues that day and supported 40 additional rescues. And so they were there Tuesday helping these people escape the flames that they were experiencing. We have staff in the shelters. I met with many of the individuals. They're right there. Our staff are walking and talking to the people and helping them register for assistance. We also have our voluntary agencies like the United Way and the American Red Cross that are there. And I, you know, we know that we need to get to everybody. There's also people that are staying with family and friends, staying with residents in other parts of the island, and that's why our teams will continue to go out into the communities to make sure everybody that needs assistance can get assistance. I think the Disaster Recovery Center is going to be one way that they have a place and a focal point that they can come get their questions answered instead of just going to a shelter, which is what's been available right now.
I know that FEMA takes a backseat to states in situations like this, but Hawaii is a small state. Does Hawaii have the staffing and the expertise to lead a recovery effort of this magnitude?
And we've been embedded with them. We actually have personnel that integrate in year-round with them to help maintain their capacity. But we also recognize that this is a large event for them, and they are a small state. They have asked for assistance from some of our other states, and I can say, like, California, Cal OES is sending one of their incident management teams to embed with Maui Emergency Management to help give them the capacity, help give them some of the relief they need, and help develop that structure to maintain this longer-term response.
Of the recovery effort over to FEMA if they wanted to?
I don't think we would ever want that, right? This is their community. We want to be able to support them, and we will be there to support them throughout this recovery process.
Thanks, Administrator Criswell. Yesterday we heard from the President who said he was hoping to visit soon. Obviously, the announcement was made today, but he didn't want it to be disruptive. Can you talk specifically about what the President will see, who he'll meet with, and what efforts are being undertaken to make sure that his visit is not disrupting the ongoing efforts to support the local community?
Yeah, I mean, as I have been briefing the President, I have been explaining to him the dynamics of the situation on the ground and the ability to make sure that we give the space to our search and rescue teams to continue to be able to account for everybody that is missing. I know when the President travels, he's going to be able to bring hope, and he's going to speak with the governor and the state's first lady and talk to survivors and hear their stories. And it's that level of hope that I think is going to really be a positive impact for this community.
And then there's an interesting debate, a very difficult debate even happening among state and local leaders about the role of tourism, that whether it should be still allowed to be ongoing, the appropriateness of tourism in the community there as it relates to the economy. Does the administration, does FEMA take a view about whether continued tourism is maybe potentially disruptive to this effort, especially as it relates to providing enough housing for those who have been displaced?
Yeah, I would defer you to the state for any actions that they're going to take as it relates to tourism. It does not impact or affect our ability to respond and support the state, and it's not a factor that we take into consideration. We'll continue to send resources in to support whatever the state needs.
How many people so far have applied for federal disaster aid? And can you lay out sort of the biggest barriers that people are facing? Is it just a lack of internet, phone connectivity, or is it a lack of information?
Yeah, I think what I said is right now we've approved over 1,300 registrations. I don't know what the total number of individuals that has applied so far. But one of the things that I really need your help on, it's not as much as lack of communication and cell phone capability. It's lack of understanding whether they should or should not apply for federal aid. And we want everybody in Hawaii to know that they should apply for federal assistance. And if they haven't, we'll have people that will be going out into the communities, that they're in the shelters, they'll be at the DRC. They should start that process, and we can work with them to start their road to recovery.
1,300 number into context. I mean, how many people, in your view, just an estimate, are eligible?
I don't have that number, and I'm certain we can get some of our estimates of what we think will be eligible, and we'll apply, and we can get that to you.
Just to follow on Mike's question about the President's visit, can you talk about what thresholds or milestones you expect to be crossed in the recovery process by August 21st that makes you comfortable with having the President visit then and meet his objective of not interrupting the process?
Yeah, our biggest goal was to make sure that we weren't going to disrupt the ability of our search and rescue teams to continue their operations. And when I was just briefing the President and he spoke with the governor, he asked the governor if this was going to be an appropriate time, and the governor agreed.
So search and recovery is expected will be completed?
It will not be completed, but it will be in an area where he will not be impacting that.
Thank you.
On the monetary assistance that's available, this critical need assistance, I believe that's just a one-time per household payment. It's intended for consumable. But our teams on the ground are hearing from people who are concerned about making their car payment, making their basic bills now that their lives have been so upended. What do you say to residents who fear that the money that is, you know, being made available just isn't going to cut it?
Yeah, the programs that FEMA has, the critical needs assistance, is just that. It's to support some of their very initial basic needs. In addition, we have our individual and household programs that can provide additional funding that covers, you know, home repairs. In this case, you know, many people, most people lost everything. But they can also cover losses to personal property such as vehicles or major appliances. We'll work with each individual as they register for assistance to help understand what's eligible under FEMA. FEMA's programs, again, designed to help jumpstart that recovery process. It won't cover all of their needs, and we'll work with our faith-based partners as well as some of the philanthropy organizations that have been giving funding to the state so we can make sure that everybody has their cases managed in a way that helps them meet any of the unmet needs that they have.
And on your coordination with state officials, and you said when we talked to you earlier in the week that you've been encouraging them to really make their requests early to try and think about what they're going to need in a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You know, given how understandably overwhelmed they are, do you feel they have the ability to do that, to be able to think that far in advance, you know, to see what they're going to need a little bit further down the road so you can provide those resources?
And I think part of what we have done as we have embedded our teams in is we help them think about what their potential needs are going to be, and bringing in this, you know, additional team that's going to support the county will help them think through strategically into the future, you know, what are we going to need a week from now, 2 weeks from now. And those are the types of daily conversations in a future planning cell that are happening every day so we can make sure we have a continuous flow of resources into the area.
I know your focus right now is on the response, but it does seem like there's some questions emerging about how these fires began and how they were able to spread so devastatingly, including questions about the sirens that went off and also about faults in the utility grids. In your conversations with the president and in his conversations that you've been there for with the governor, how interested is he in accountability for what happened? Does he want to get to the bottom of that? And is that something that he's asking your team or other teams to look into?
You know, we always want to make sure that we understand what happened and how we can continue to improve so we can minimize the impact that other communities may have, and that's something that the president is committed to. This is still going to be part of the state's response to determine what level that they want to assess the cause and any other initial response. But we as a community, as an emergency management community, always want to continually learn from the events that we're facing, especially as we are seeing a continuous rise in the number of severe weather events. That way we can put the measures in place to either make communities more fire resistant, that we can mitigate against some of the other damages or the other threats that we're going to face in the future, and we can reduce the impact that these communities are going to see, but also help individuals understand what the future risks are that they could potentially face, and they can take the proper measures to make sure that they are prepared, them and their families, to protect themselves.
You said on Monday that you were going to need some additional funding so that you don't have to push some projects into next fiscal year. Do you have an estimate for how much is going to be needed?
And I think the administration supplemental request has gone up. I believe our initial request was in there for $12 billion. Again, we have enough funding to support the ongoing response efforts because we take events like this into consideration. But it would delay, if we don't have additional funding, it would delay some of the recovery projects and push them into next year.
Beyond that $12 billion, though, you're going to need more beyond that?
We may potentially need more beyond that, and my team is assessing that now.
I think one last question. Wait a minute. Hi. You mentioned this with the LDA long recovery. Can you talk about the mental health aspect of it, the assistance that the federal government provides, how people can access that?
The mental health aspect, is that what you asked? Yeah, I mean, this community is going through one of the worst things that we could possibly imagine, and the mental health concerns are real, and the mental health concerns are a priority for the governor and his team. We have, as part of our programs, the ability to bring in mental health services through our crisis counseling program, but the American Red Cross has also brought in mental health specialists, and as they continue to support the state's sheltering operations, what they are doing is they are embedding mental health specialists to make sure that they can help address some of the immediate concerns and needs that these community members are having.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this again.
My pleasure. Thank you for everything that you're doing.
Okay, let's move on. And that was the report by FEMA director, Deanne Criswell. Deanne Criswell was unanimously confirmed by the Senate on April 22, 2021, as the 12th administrator of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. Ms. Criswell is the first woman confirmed to serve as the administrator, where she leads the nation's efforts in helping people before, during, and after disasters. And as you heard, there is quite a bit to address in those who are struggling with major disasters. You can read the governor of Illinois' response to the president's making available assistance. Go to onairdailynews.com, and the link to apply for federal assistance is there as well. And we'll continue more with the White House briefing from White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
As you all know, today is the first anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act. You know, most one-year-olds can barely walk, but this one is this one-year-old is up and running. I couldn't help myself, sorry. Up and running. So that's very excited. We're very excited about the Inflation Reduction Act and everything that it's doing. And with that, I have two guests with me. And as you know, in a couple of hours, the president will deliver remarks at an event marking all this transformative bill has accomplished in just a year. You guys didn't laugh at my one-year-old joke. Okay. All right. But let me just make sure I get their titles right. So I don't want to mess this up. We're going to hear from a senior advisor to the president for climate innovation and implementation, John Podesta, and also the domestic policy advisor to the president, Neera Tandem. Please come on up, and I'll let them take it from here. Go ahead.
Thanks, Karine. It's good to be with you. As Karine noted, we're marking the one-year anniversary of a truly transformative piece of legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is the largest investment in clean energy and climate action ever in the United States in the history of the world. But first, I want to acknowledge that today's event is coming during a time of heartbreak as the toll of extreme weather fueled by climate change is being felt across the country and the world. This summer has brought one climate disaster after another, from extreme heat in Arizona and Texas and across the southeast to floods in Vermont and upstate New York to thick smoke from Canadian wildfires. And all of us have watched in horror as the Maui fires have claimed over 100 lives, the largest loss of life of a fire in the last 100 years in America. As FEMA Administrator Criswell just explained, the administration is doing everything we can to support Hawaii's rescue and recovery efforts. To stop these disasters from getting even worse, we have to cut the carbon pollution that's driving the climate crisis, and that's what the Inflation Reduction Act is all about. It makes the largest investment in clean energy and climate action in the world, touching every sector: power, transportation, buildings, forestry. It's reducing energy costs for hardworking Americans by offering $7,500 off qualifying electric vehicles and up to 30% off heat pumps and solar panels, which can lower monthly utility bills for families by hundreds of dollars a year. Already, utility companies have announced they'll be able to pass on to their customers at least $8 billion of savings thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act. And a new report released this morning by the Department of Energy shows grow to up to $38 billion between now and the end of the decade. And this law is putting us on a path to reach the Biden-Harris administration's goal of reducing emissions by 50 to 52% below 2005 levels by 2030.
And that was the White House briefing. You've been listening to On Air Daily News for Wednesday, August 16th, 2023. I'm Naima Latif. Join us again tomorrow and every day, Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern. You can listen live on Blog Talk Radio or here in the archive at On Air Daily News. Until next time. Enjoy the rest of your day.